Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/news ad free. That's amazon.com/news ad free to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot, we charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
Sorry if you were recording then and you wanted me to say something funny, but I don't have anything to say on that.
I'm recording now, but that wasn't very funny.
So no, it wasn't, so I'm here not give you material. That's my purpose on this podcast, is to ruin it.
I'm also going to take a note of every time you swear, just to make it easier to... Anyway, let's get on with this.
This is a Manhattan-bound B Express train. The next stop is... Grand Street.
Mind the gap.
Hello, I'm John Elledge and this is Skylines, the Cinemetric podcast. This is what passes for a Christmas special round here. We're in the midst of austerity. Everything's a bit depressing and miserable, so we're not really bothering. We, instead of talking about something festive, we are going to talk about something shit. We're going to talk about shit towns for two reasons. One of which is, of course, it's Christmas, everyone is going home, and a lot of people grow up in shit towns, so it seemed seasonally appropriate. And the other thing is Formula One driver Lewis Hamilton has just managed to offend his entire hometown of Stevenage by describing it as the slums. I've not been to Stevenage. I don't think it's like the favelas of Rio, to be honest. It's more of a sort of boring suburban new town, but there we are. So anyway, to discuss this cheerful and festive and definitely absolutely Christmassy topic, I have with me two of my colleagues, one of which is our resident American, Sarah Minervis. Hello, Sarah. How are you doing?
Hi, everyone. Glad to be back.
You grew up in a pretty, I mean, you're generally very nice about your hometown, of course.
Yeah, and I've been especially nice about it on this podcast. Yeah, I am originally, to be fair, I think the town I'm from is actually fine, but I am from Dayton, Ohio, which is infamously a very shit
place. I think it's actually ruder to like slag off your neighbors while being nice about your own home.
Like, I am from Dayton. I am a Daytonian. I'm from the dirty DYT, as I used to say when I was 15. But I am, I guess, technically more specifically from Oakwood, Ohio, which is actually technically a city, even though it has 9,000 people and is 2 square miles.
Well, before we get too far into the gazetteer of the Midwest, I should introduce our other guest, my colleague Rowan Banerjee. Hello, Rowan.
Hello, thanks very much for having me on.
And where are you from?
I'm from Ramsgate, which, like Lewis Hamilton's hometown of Stevenage, has got a hyperbolised reputation of being a lot worse than it is. It's a bit
UKIP-y, isn't it?
It's very UKIP-y. Nigel Farage ran to be our MP twice, got very close the second time round. It was overwhelmingly in favour of leaving the European Union, of course. And I suppose, like, the people who are more inclined to remain, more left-leaning, you know, get quite weary from living there. They've coined the term Rams Ghetto, but again, anywhere that has a yacht club can't really be called a ghetto in my book.
Okay, I mean, who are the people who like use the yacht club? Are they? Well, what's the overlap between the yacht club
the UKIP people? It's Ramsgate is a land of contrast. You know, for the Royal Temple Yacht Club, which overlooks the very picturesque harbour, there is also the country's, nay, the world's biggest Wetherspoons a few hundred yards
away.
So you know, I mean, by proxy, I don't think there are any Wetherspoons outside of the UK, in fairness.
I mean, he's not... Old Tim Martin's not wild about the world outside the UK, is he? So probably...
Yeah, the global ambitions of Wetherspoons are probably a bit understated. Yeah.
So I'm being slightly dismissive in literally dismissing large chunks of the planet as shit towns. But I can't help but notice that there are three of us in this room. None of us live in the places we grew up. What's that all about? Why did we all leave? Sarah, you have strong opinions on things.
Yes, and I have a very strong opinion about that. I never wanted to live in Dayton, Ohio. My town, actually, Oakwood, Ohio, home to Brock Turner, the infamous Stanford or sex offender. I'm sure you'll be able to put that in very nicely, marking down the swear. John is, for all the listeners, which just make it cut, John is now writing down every time I swear or apparently slander someone.
I'm not even going to bother on the swearing. It's just going to, it's Christmas.
Is this
it's not
just
really
going to be an explicit episode.
We're going to lose our universal rating. It's going to be an adult only cities podcast because you can't stop swearing.
But my hometown is, to be fair, it's very pretty, but it also has the name, the nickname, the Dome, because once you're under the Dome, you never get out. I got out, obviously. But even though my dad is a Greek immigrant, he still lives there, and his parents still live there after moving there from Greece. Almost everyone in the town, their parents live there. We've got in our school a wall of everyone's face who's ever gone to the school in these big photographs, and people can find their grandparents on that wall and things like that. And so, yeah, I did not want to participate in that tradition, that rich tradition.
Okay, but like, if people tend to move there and then stay there, that does, sight unseen, suggest that there's actually something kind of quite nice about the place.
It's very nice in the sense that there are trees and there's a Starbucks, which is very exciting. And we have like quite a nice supermarket, Dorothy Lane Market. Yeah, but other than that, nothing really happens. And I think it's just your classic American suburbia, like cookie cutter town. And then also with this very dark sort of underbelly that's also happening. So it's that kind of beautiful combination, dramatic combination, very Real Housewives, or not Real Housewives, Desperate Housewives.
So why were you so desperate to get out?
As I mentioned, I am actually half a Greek person. And so I got exposed to like a very weird part of the world and a very weird group of people. And I'm allowed to say that, everyone, because I'm Greek. And it is weird. And marking that down for the edits. Yeah, and I had exposure to an outside world that I think a lot of people in Dayton, Ohio did not have, where like the exotic cuisine was getting a Chinese takeaway. And when I went to go have Indian food, I was mocked for my sort of worldly tastes and fancy lady meals, having my curries and my kormas and things like that. Yeah, so that was just not me. And I didn't really want to do that. And because I had the Greek citizenship as well, it meant that I had a very easy out to a different location.
Okay, so here's my thing. The Lewis Hamilton comment is not for the first time. It was a stupid thing to say. He has a bit of a history of saying slightly stupid things. But he's got, you know, billions of pounds, so I'm not sure he's that bothered about it. But I kind of think that that comment was misrepresented by the good people of Stevenage. I don't think he was literally saying, I believe this place to be a slum. He was just kind of like using it as a way of saying, you know, I dreamt of getting out of this slightly stultifying place I grew up in. And that's true of like most people, right? Isn't it?
I think so. I mean, so Ramsgate, oddly, is, Ramsgate, along with Margate and Broadstairs, are the three main towns on the Isle of Thanet, which is not actually an island, but people from Thanet, in their typical Phoenician way, you know, insist on calling
it Phoenician.
That's a very glamorous.
That's a fantastic.
That is a Thanet native, is a Phoenician. So it used to be an island many thousands of years ago, and then geography happened and it's no longer an island, but the name sort of stuck. And that's oddly fitting because the area, much like small town America, also has like a little bit of an island mentality, or more than a little bit of an island mentality. Very suspicious of outsiders, lots of generations of families going to the same schools, going to the same pubs as their parents. Very fiercely protective of their local histories and local cultures, and then, you know, just a little bit wary of what's on the outside of those borders. That's probably reflected in no small way in how Thanet voted to leave the European Union, for example. But in terms of like why people insist on staying in that place, despite there being not an awful lot to do, I suppose like there's a security about it. Much like Sarah, because I'm mixed race, I'm three quarters Indian and therefore have foreign relatives and relatives in different countries. And therefore, for me, it was never really a novelty to go and explore and go to different places. Whereas a lot of people in Thanet have never actually, they've not really ventured outside of Kent, let alone outside of the UK. So for me, I kind of just got bored of being in that island community and wanted to move on.
But like growing up, were you conscious of like, you know, I've got to get out of this place at some point? Like, were you kind of like looking to the along the railway line to the big city?
I'll be honest, like the camps, Thanet's people fall into kind of two camps, and those camps are largely divided by the 11 plus. So because Kent is one of the few places that still has grammar schools, what those grammar schools do is they create quite an obvious tier in that part of the world. So basically, if you pass the 11 plus and go to the grammar school, then you're given a lot of opportunities to go off to university, to go and get certain jobs, to go and work in the city, to go away. And if you don't pass the 11 plus and you go to one of the other schools, which are not as well run and not as well funded and don't have donors or famous alumni giving them libraries and things like that, then you have more chance and you're more likely to stay in Thanet. And in a weird way, despite that being so obviously an unfair system, people in Thanet like it. They actually quite like they like the division. They like the unity of being from Thanet, but they like the division within, you know, it, like any island where there's a community like that, they kind of enjoy the infighting. It's bizarre, but like that is the case. It has always been the case.
I think that is a thing though in like small places, is it's like that self-sustaining like inter-town drama that almost gives you like a driving purpose.
It's Shelbyville versus Springfield. That is quite an accurate comparison. You know, Ramsgate, Margate, Broadstairs have got that Thanet Thanetian commonality, but then at the same time they have the grammar school non-grammar school divide. And you know, even though there's quite an obvious middle class there and quite an obvious working class there, you know, they quite like to, you know, have these divisions between them. But at the same time, they are united by the fact that they're both on the same island, which isn't actually an island.
You're kind of obsessed with them not actually an island. is it like the most interesting thing you can think of to say about Thanet or something? Like?
Well, the most interesting things to say about Thanet aren't much more interesting. I suppose we've covered the first one, which is that Farage ran to be RMP.
You've done the Weatherspoons.
We've done the biggest Weatherspoons in the world. I've done that. There was an episode of Only Fools and Horses filmed in Margate.
I love the Jolly Boys out.
So that was there.
That's the one where the coach blows up, isn't it?
Yeah, that's right. So that was us. Yeah. Tracy Emin it was shortlisted for the Turner Prize for her Unmade Bed.
Oh yeah, you've got the Turner Gallery, haven't you?
Yeah, no one goes. No one goes.
No, I have been. I've actually been to Margate.
No one from Thanet goes.
There we go.
This is the weird thing about that. I went to Margate to go to this gallery and just have a look around Margate. And, like, this is before the Dreamland reopened, which is the amusement park.
Yeah.
But having been to the gallery, there wasn't really a lot else to do in Margate. And there's kind of a lot of sort of Guardian types who've moved out there who are trying to make Margate happen.
Yeah.
And I don't think it's happening.
Margate transitioning to being like the Shoreditch of Kent, that's a recent thing.
Wow.
I honestly think...
What a set of words that
was.
Yeah,
I honestly think being the Shoreditch of Kent is probably an overstatement that has been kind of peddled through the Guardian by those people. In reality, I think Margate is still very much Margate. But yeah, in terms of like young people who grow up there, are they told or do they have the impression that they need to leave? Well, there are more jobs outside of Thanet than in Thanet, so that people are always very aware of that. But then I think whether or not how far you're encouraged to go away will ultimately come down to what kind of school you went to.
But it's not so much about sensing that you need to leave. It's more that, like, I always wanted to get away from where I grew up, but I think it's got...
Can I just say, as well, you are not really living in a different place from when you grew up. From where you grew up.
Yeah, no, I know.
But it's worth pointing that out, that you're like, ah, all of us have fled our homes, and you're like, ah, my home that is like 20 minutes in an Uber away from here.
It's more than 20 minutes.
Okay, it's like 45 minutes,
yeah,
in an Uber.
But no, it's still... Romford is technically in Greater London... But it is culturally very different. It's kind of like leaving Staten Island for Manhattan. You know, Staten Island voted for Trump.
I would still, though, if I was like, where's this person from? I'd be like, oh, they're from New York.
But no, so it sort of depends how far you go. To anyone from the southeast of England, if they ask me where I'm from, I would probably not say London. Or at least, you know, I didn't grow up in London. Because they will laugh. Romford's not bloody London, it's Essex. Whereas, like, you get beyond that and that division gets erased. Like, obviously, in the global terms, it's stupid to say I didn't grow up in London because I grew up with someone with an underground station. That's, you know, but nonetheless.
This is your weird London-centric brain telling you these things. Everywhere else would classify that as London.
But, like, okay, so this sort of annoyed me when I, there's a book called The Buddha of Suburbia by Hanif Qureshi.
I have not read it.
It's, I mean, he's such a smug man. He's like, honestly, he has a level of smugness that would put the average New Statesman contributor to shame. Honestly, it's dreadful. But anyway, it's he grew up in like suburban Kent, not like the end of Kent you're from, Rowan, but like, you know, Bromley. And in The Buddha of Suburbia, he kind of talks about Bromley as the provinces. And when he moves to Kensington, he talks about it as the city. And I think calling Bromley the provinces is stupid. Because, again, it's like, you know, 20 minutes from town in a cab. But nonetheless, there is that kind of sort of psychological divide where it's, you know, there's a lot less ethnic diversity. People don't necessarily think they're living in the city, even if they're kind of deluding themselves, even if this place only exists because, you know, a bunch of people bought houses there because it was commutable to jobs in the city. Psychologically, that people often think of it in a slightly different way.
Normally, being a little extra can be a bit much, but when it comes to healthcare, it pays to be extra. And United Healthcare makes it easy with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they supplement your primary plan, helping you manage out-of-pocket costs without the usual requirements and restrictions like deductibles and enrollment periods. So when it comes to covering your medical bills, you can feel good about being a little extra. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
So it's, yeah, it's, I didn't like literally, you know, switch continents like you did.
Well, yeah,
desperate
I'm not trying
to
say,
get away from the people that
I'm
you're,
not
you're mean
trying
about
to say
podcasts,
that everybody, but, like, I'm not trying to say that every single person should have to, like, flee their tiny town and move to, yeah, across an ocean. I'm not going to be an asshole about it, but I would say that you're splitting
there are degrees
hairs
of these
there,
things.
My,
I kind of
friend.
Get, yeah, I kind of get to have the best of both worlds because I can, like, you know, live in the city and still be at my mum's in half an hour if I really want to.
I would say that you have the worst of both worlds because both of them are in London.
So
way.
I take your smug literature reference and raise it a very obscure and kind of like you know, clever teenager quote. In the there's a and if I get this wrong, if this turns out to be a quote from the wrong philosopher, then I'm going to look really stupid. But
and the listeners will write
yeah,
it.
Yeah. But isn't it a Saint
Augustine? Rowan is on Twitter.
Yeah, a Saint Augustine of Hippo quote is the man who says his mother's cooking is the best he's ever had is the man who hasn't travelled. Right, that basically sums up the problem.
Oh God, I wouldn't say that. Sorry, Mum, but
well, that kind of sums up the problem with a lot of the people that I am still in touch with when I go back home. Where it actually happened last year, not long after the big Wetherspoons opened, I was home for a weekend and I went for a drink with a friend who, whereas most of my friends did go off to university and then go and work in London, Manchester, wherever. A few of them did stay, and I met up with one of them in this giant Wetherspoons, and we were talking about Antoine Griezmann, the footballer who, for a costume party, blacked up, and he, you know, I was saying this was a really bad thing. It was very insensitive. It was, you know, going against the grain of like the progress that we'd made in other aspects of football and racism. And my friend Anthony, I won't say his last name though. he couldn't understand why I was so angry about this. He couldn't understand what I thought was the problem. He said, like, oh, it's just political correctness gone mad. Why is it offensive and so on? And again, like, not to say that that's the only reason why he thought like that, but again, it was just amazing that of my friends who thought it was a problem, they tended to be the ones who had left Thanet, and the ones who had stayed didn't see the issue with this. And part of that is because Thanet has such poor racial diversity, you don't really meet a lot of different people, you don't really get a lot of insight into different experiences. For him, while he wouldn't consider himself to be racist by any stretch, he's ignorant of those experiences and those struggles because he doesn't see them. He hasn't gone and met lots of, you know, in my year group, there were 2 black kids in the whole year group in 140.
That was exactly the same with us as well.
So again, while it might not be the kind of like in your face, in your face, top of the range apartheid level racism, it's still, you know, lack of exposure racism in that, you know, institutionally they've got no experience of it. So that's, I find it really frustrating when I go home, because unfortunately I'll have those conversations about what is right or wrong, and people in Thanet who have not left Thanet won't necessarily see them as a problem. Oh, it's just, you know, oh, somebody's going OTT, somebody's complaining too much, you know, you can't say anything these days.
So here's a question, like, going back to the beginning of the conversation, that Lewis Hamilton clearly thought that a big part of it, not a big part of his success, but, you know, a sign of his success was that he had got the hell out of Stevenage. And, you know, obviously the leader of the council is a bit miffed by this because he's like the most famous person ever to come out of Stevenage, and now he's just slamming the place.
Just dunking on them.
Yeah, you'd obviously be a bit unhappy about that. But nonetheless, like, the two ideas of, like, you know, leaving his hometown and being successful are kind of connected in his mind. So what I'm wondering is, what would it take to make you guys move back to where you came from?
I would never move back. Nothing would ever make me move back. And I really mean, unless if I somehow got into like £100,000 into debt and Brexit happened and they really shat it even more than we already know they're going to shit it up. And they were like, all of the EU people, mark it down, all the EU people got kicked out and I had no money and my mom died, who lives in Chicago, and I had nowhere else to go. And all of my friends died. They're all dead. And Jamie and I aren't together anymore. Maybe he's dead. My dog's dead. And I have
this
to...
This has got dark for a Christmas
I
special.
Have
You're like
to
killing everyone you know.
Go and say to my wonderful family friends, to be fair, that are still in Dayton, or my dad, I need somewhere to live. And in that case, I would go back and live in Oakwood, Dayton. And in no other scenario would I do this.
So just to be clear, this is not just about not wanting to move back to like Trump's America. This is also specifically about your home.
No, because I don't want to move back to the US, and not to get into like me boringly talking about where I might live in the world one day. But like Chicago, which is where my mom lives at the moment, is a really great city, and I really love DC, and there are some other places that are also good, that are cities that I would live in, even like more rural places, maybe for a short period of time, but I would not go back to Dayton. I went back a year and a half ago. I was there for 3 days, and I hadn't been back for 2 years, and that was plenty.
Ryan, what would it take to get you back to Thanet?
I mean, I don't think I need to massacre family or friends to go back. I go back fairly regularly, as it is. Less so since my late grandmother passed away in 2017, and I was very close to her, and when she was alive, I would go home very regularly because I wanted to maintain that relationship. Also, it's not very far. You know, we're on HS1, you know, door-to-door, you're looking at about 2 hours, you know, in total. So it wasn't really that expensive, and it didn't take that long to go back. Despite that, I would only ever go for short bursts because the thing is, as much as I like to go back regularly, I like to just go and do 2 or 3 days and then come back. Any longer than that, and how small Thanet is kind of started to kind of weigh down on you, and you realise that you get cabin fever because you can't go. You know, there are only a finite amount of. There's a finite amount of pubs in London, but there are so many more. But there's such a limited number of pubs and places to go in Thanet that, you know, it wouldn't take that many to see someone you know. And, like, you know, you can't really escape from anything. And, you know, going to Canterbury, which is the nearest city, you know, Canterbury's tiny. So it's kind of
pushing it with the definition of city.
Exactly. In terms of what would make me go back, I mean, you know, my family are still down there, and I suppose being close to them is, you know, very important. But at the same time, because I'm already close to them, I don't see the need to go and live back there. You know, the house prices are slightly cheaper, but like...
Slightly. I mean, it's like significantly cheaper.
Okay, yeah. Significantly cheaper. Yeah. Okay. So, yeah, significantly cheaper. But yeah, I don't know. I don't see what Fannet could give me that London can't at the moment. But I mean, when I went to university, because I went as far away from Fannet as possible, undergrad York, postgrad Durham, like literally went to the other side of, you know, the other end of the country. And that was partly because, again, I had some family members who were up there and I wasn't really nervous about going up north, but also because I just wanted to have that luxury of contrast. Whereas so many people in Thanet, they just, you know, they'll go to the same schools, the same pubs and all that as their parents, and they'd be quite content to stay there. For me, I got itchy feet. By the time I got to about 13, 14, I knew that I wanted to go far away and just have something completely different.
There is a sort of class thing to all this, isn't there? And it's not either the traditional breakdown of the English class system, but it's not just a wealth thing either. But there is, it's a sort of a split between like metropolitan liberals and you know, more provincial. It's the Trump split. It's the Brexit split.
I think that is it. Like, because my town is really weird in the sense that like half of the town is like working class, upper working class, which is where I would have plugged myself into growing up. And then like extreme wealth, like indoor swimming pools wealth, tennis courts, like staff on hand, like nannies, that like the whole shebang of like CEO parents. And yet it isn't. Yeah, it has nothing to do with like what your like household income is, whether or not you stay in my town. It really is more about, yeah, like how much exposure you have to the rest of the world, I think.
It's definitely attitude over income.
Yeah, definitely.
Because, for example, there are some very wealthy people who are self-made in Thanet, who have grown up in Thanet and gone to school there and never left and all that. Like a guy called Phil Thorley, who runs Thorley Taverns, which until Wetherspoons came there, Thorley Taverns were like the big dogs in terms of hospitality, entertainment, you know, pubs and clubs. In Thanet, they have 16 venues across the aisle, and
cheeky aisle.
Yeah,
again.
The cheeky aisle. But 16 venues, and yeah, he and his brothers, Phil Thorley, Frank Thorley, and all that, they are all local, and they're, you know, they've got almost a local celebrity as well. People recognise them because of the smallness of the area, and so on. And yeah, they're very well. I mean, you know, they're very comfortable, very successful, and you know, they've never left. And I suppose they don't, you know, they might have a "if it ain't broke, don't fix it" kind of
approach. I find guys like this quite so. I met a guy in Warrington whose name I can't remember, but he runs this whole series of magazines promoting Warrington. And in his email to me, he's like on the sort of local Chamber of Commerce and so on. And in his email to me, when I asked if he fancied meeting up for a coffee, he said, "Oh, that'd be great. As it happens, people often call me Mr. Warrington." And like this,
did you meet him in Warrington?
Yeah, there's an article online, you can dig it out, in which I don't quote him actually, so don't bother. It's not, but Warrington was quite nice. But I find that kind of sweet, that kind of like, I really don't have that level of pride in my home, but it's kind of good for the world that there are people who do and like genuinely do want to stick around these places and like actually sort of build them rather than just thinking I'm going to get the hell out of here as soon as I can.
I do also think though it does feed into this kind of like weird, unhealthy attitude a lot of the time. Like, so for example, as I jokingly referred to at the beginning of this podcast, my town is where Brock Turner, the Stanford swimmer sex offender, grew up, and I went to school with him. I saw him loads. It's a very small town. And we had a family friend of mine actually had a piece in the Washington Post about our town and kind of this weird split where you have the half of the town is like, you know, we're horrified and thought we need to be like thinking about how we teach our kids if this stuff, this entitlement can happen. And half the town kind of just brushed under the carpet. But the outrage at that article using our town as sort of like a metaphor for suburbia, where we kids never hear no for an answer. The backlash was terrible because they were like, how dare you slander our perfect town? And there's so much town pride that like, it's very tribalistic. And if you go against it, and I do see what you're saying. I think it is really nice, and you do need people that are like championing these places. But equally, I do think as well that it is a slippery slope, isn't it? Where you do get into this like overbearing defense that is kind of like senseless and foundationless.
I think like it's amazing that people can be so united by one common thing in general, like where they're from is such a big part. But you know, when I got to university and I meet people from all over the country, and you know, people from Newcastle and Liverpool and Manchester, which are these and London, of course, you know, vibrant cities that have got rich histories and have produced so many great things, and then I look at Thanet and talk about being the setting for an episode of Only Fools and Horses, or like, you know, an artist giving her unmade bed as her entry to the Turner Prize. You know, in a weird way though, like it's almost, it is quite charming that despite those achievements being objectively less of an achievement than, say, you know, producing the Beatles or having two massive football clubs in Manchester or something like that. You know, those kind of things, you know, that Liverpool and Manchester have that we just can't even fathom. Despite that, it's quite nice. It's quite nice that people with Thanet do feel that pride.
Yeah.
It's weird, but like it's still a nice thing. You know, I don't hate my hometown. I'm just very aware of its limitations.
I think that's the key, isn't it? I don't hate mine either. I just think, I wouldn't want to live there again. It's very nice to visit, but I couldn't take it anymore.
Well, talking of producing the Beatles, I should say that one of the Who grew up in Stevenage, but I can't for the life remember which, so that's something. Should be wrapping up. But
are we not going to do a Christmas element?
We're not going to do a Christmas element.
We should do a Christmas element! Where is the best place you've ever had Christmas?
I've not really had Christmas. My dad's side of the family have a long history of doing Christmases at holiday camps, which I've done a few times, which is awful, which I would not recommend, and which does totally go against my sort of metropolitan liberal self-image and turns me into such a complete snob. But we're not going to... I was going to do a sort of Christmas message.
Well, I was going to say, I have spent Christmas... So I grew up in Dayton, Ohio, and my mom has actually, from my second year of university, she has travelled a lot for her job because her kids... off, and she was like, oh, I could live in other places. So I've had Christmas in multiple cities in Europe and in the US, and I will say one thing is that even when you're in like a really interesting city like Amsterdam or London or something like that, there is something that you miss about being at home in your tiny town, and something very cozy and homey about that. So that's my nice Christmas message. I miss my town.
There you go. The Queen. I just wanted to say, in many ways, it's been an absolutely bloody shocking year, both in politics and also, frankly, in my personal life, for all sorts of reasons. But one of the things I've really enjoyed is you know, this podcast, and you lot, is, you know, it's quite nice that whenever I speak to someone who listens to the podcast, they're always weirdly nice to me, given the amount of nonsense we talk. And I kind of like that. So I just want to say thank you and have a lovely Christmas.
And to all a good night.
Look at you being... nice to your little nerdy podcast listeners.
Oh, off, Sarah. You've been listening to Skylines, the podcast from City Metric, the New Statesman City site. It was presented and produced by me, John Ellidge. If you enjoyed the episode, then please do consider leaving us an iTunes review. It really helps other people to discover the show. And, you know, the more people get listening to the show, the sooner I can achieve my real goal of world domination for the medium of trains. Thanks for listening. Goodbye.
Tired of ads barging into your favorite news podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay up to date on everything newsworthy by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/newsadfree. That's amazon.com/newsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Even when we're on a budget, we still deserve nice things. Quince is a place to scoop up stunning high-end goods for 50 to 80% less than similar brands. They have buttery soft cashmere sweaters starting at $50, luxurious Italian leather bags, and so much more. Plus, Quince only works with factories that use safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. Get the high-end goods you'll love without the high price tag with Quince. Go to quince.com/style for free shipping and 365-day returns.